This is EdgeCases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the Kate Nally of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Potius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 37. It's Saturday, February 16th, 2013. And our topic this week, Wolf?
Getting things done and productivity.
Productivity and or unproductivity, I suppose the case may be. So Wolf has two topics in a row because he was a slacker and got sick 2 weeks ago. So I did two topics, and now he's doing two topics. And then all will be right with the world, and we will continue our normal, even odd split, right?
That's apparently what you signed me up for, yes.
Yes. Well, I'll be helping a little more with this topic, as we discussed. Right. So, But okay. So I've got a little bit of follow-up. Actually, more than a little bit of follow-up, but we'll see how it goes. So, I had mentioned in my episode about QA engineers that I hadn't seen any QA engineer blogs. And Paul Capistani, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right, mentioned that he had found a QA blog, and it was it's called Neglected Potential, and it's by Nick Arnott, who is the head of quality assurance at Double Encore. And Nick goes by Noir on Twitter and app.net. And so I did take a look at his blog. And while there's some testing specific stuff, a lot of his posts are just sort of the general tech related topics that you might find on any other developer blog.
Yeah, I read his blog and I didn't realize that he was a QA guy. So, okay.
Yeah. Well, there's some stuff about testing, but it's not like, you know, every post is just this big long thing about testing. So, you know, originally I was thinking, well, that doesn't tell me very much. But I guess the fact that it doesn't tell me very much kind of tells me something, right? Like, you know, maybe we can all, you know, just get along, right? We're not all that different. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing was something of an experiment I tried this last week, which is I had recently finished off the last of the Build and Analyze episodes. And I don't have the exact number handy with me, but in one of their last episodes, they talked about app.net again, as various podcasts have been talking about for a while now. And they mentioned that it does seem like it's not necessarily growing anymore, that it seems like people have dropped off of it. But everybody still kind of wishes well for it because they want to have an alternative to Twitter now that Twitter seems to be turning against its initial users. And so I decided to make a little experiment where I said, I will go on app.net every day and give a little tidbit, little behind-the-scenes bit from EdgeCases, from how EdgeCases got started. And so you can find that yourself. So I'm apontius on app.net. And if you search on the hashtag EdgeCases, all one word, then you'll find all those things that I've been saying for the last week. And so I didn't say how long I was going to do it. Obviously, I can't do it forever because I don't have that much. There isn't really that much to do. Our podcast is, what, less than a year old. Although we actually started, it's like 6 months old now, isn't it?
What's my name? I have no idea.
All right, fine. You're Bert. What did we say about that?
I thought I was Kate.
Yeah, that's true. Or Allie. One of the two this week. So I'm not sure. So I've had it for a week, and I'm not quite sure how much longer I'm going to go with it. But as an experiment, it's kind of interesting that it didn't get a lot of people to follow me, a lot of new people to follow me. And nobody kind of said, oh, okay, I'll listen to that. And I haven't gotten any feedback on it either. So it was interesting. It's an interesting experiment. I would say that things look that app.net, you know, I had also had the sense that app.net was kind of leveling off or declining. That there wasn't enough interesting stuff going on there for me to follow it on a weekly basis or a daily basis. And I would have to say that this is kind of reinforcing that fact, that this hasn't kind of helped to generate anything, any more activity or any more feedback. You know, okay, well, I gave it a shot. But it doesn't seem like, again, like the community is just not all that vibrant at this point. And I'm not sure what would make it more vibrant at this point, because we already had sort of the introduction of the new app.net clients, like NetBot, I guess it's called.
Right.
That helped for a little while. And so the thing that Marco had brought up was that, well, if there isn't that much activity going on for most of the year that most people have signed up, then people aren't going to re-sign up. And I think that's probably going to be true of me as well. I'm not going to pay more money for something which isn't giving me a whole lot of value. But then once everybody falls off the radar completely, then it'll, you know, completely go dead. So it's unfortunate, but that's what I got right now. So do you have any feedback, Wolf?
Yeah. So last week I talked about OAuth, and Dave Reed, who's at Dave Reed, D-A-V-E-R-E-D, on Twitter, he mentioned something that's interesting. I kind of gave the tentative thumbs up to OAuth, even though it has a bunch of flaws, and he pointed out that isn't the fact that OAuth works after a password change a bad thing, since someone who stole your password has access until you revoke access to the application in question? And I actually hadn't thought through that much. And yeah, so you know, someone grabs your password, and you're like, oh no, bad people, I'll change my password. And they can keep on happily using your account if they end up using that password to get their OAuth token, so that you have to go into your list of applications and explicitly revoke use of that application. And I mean, if you were using, say, Twitterific, and bad guy uses Twitterific too, you actually have to revoke Twitterific for yourself too, I believe, and then you'd have to like reauthorize yourself, if I'm getting that correct. And I know you and I have I don't know if I would call it disagreement. It's more that I don't know how normals deal with the list of applications.
Mundanes, right?
Normals are fine. It's less criticism. So I don't know if they actually know about the list of applications that have access. I don't know if that's something they think about, they know about, they care about, that they understand how that works. I imagine they probably don't. But they probably use just a standard Twitter app and stuff like that. So I really don't know. You, I know, have a more pessimistic view that that's something they have no idea anything about. And I'm inclined to believe that, but I'm not sure. I just don't know.
Well, right. So if the only way to revoke malicious access to your account is to go to this, you know, this what shows up on, you know, dev.twitter.com, as far as I'm aware, a way to get to your access that is not even something that, you know, you necessarily can get a link to from the regular Twitter page, then people are going to have even more of a hard time getting to that than they would have thinking through, because, you know, it's hard enough to get people to change their passwords, right? Or to choose good passwords. This is, as far as I'm concerned, you know, like another level of, well, you've got to do something which is even less in your comfort zone to really knock off anybody who's doing something bad to your account.
Okay, I think this is part of the reason for our disagreement on this, is that is you don't just access that through dev.twitter.com. You can't, if you go into the little gear menu and go to settings, it's one of the main things that show up of your account, password, email notifications, profile, oh, okay, that type of stuff. It's the URL for it is twitter.com/settings/applications. And yeah, so it's not just a developer thing. And that's why I think it, you know, I don't think most users go hunting for preferences or settings or stuff like that. But the ones who might use third-party apps or might be maybe of more risk getting their password stolen, although maybe not, but those are the type of people I think would actually look through these, what, 7-8 list items and click on each one and see what each one does. So.
Well, okay, so I stand corrected. But I actually think, so yes, if you're using a third-party application, like Tweetbot or Twitterific, then yeah, you're more likely to be able to find these things and use them. But I think there are a lot of services out there which ask for your authentication, not because you're using something which is more of a power user feature, but just because that's what they do. They ask for that as part of you signing in. And I'm thinking particularly of Branch, which I've seen a lot of people refer to recently. But if it's a more popular user-centric feature rather than power user-centric, people might just say, "Oh yeah, okay, I'll give them my password," without really knowing what they're giving a service access to. And it, those type of people in general would be the kind of people, you know, like the stereotypical, you know, your mom, your grandmom, who, not necessarily, you know, try to make it clear, this is not necessarily denigrating people like that. It's just saying, you know, they don't want to think about this stuff, and so those people are more likely to get trapped by this and not know how to undo it.
Yeah, this is why I like the normal terminology, because we're the weird ones here. And you know, they have their priority system.
You so are.
Their priority system is different from ours, and yep. And is obviously more mainstream. So I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, so is that it?
Yeah, there's some other email I want to get to, but that's not going to happen this week. So we just can kind of jump right into it.
Jump right in. All right.
Okay, so Andrew, I know that. So this is actually going to be kind of a fluffy episode for us, because usually we talk about, you know, inter-process communication and code injections and why Xcode sucks. But this is
singularities.
This is you know, a topic that you might find on a normal kind of podcast, it's actually been on my list of things to talk about from the very beginning, but I did not want to be the one who was weak. And
really, and was that on our list?
I don't know if I might have had a private list that I didn't share with you because see, it all comes out in this recording. because I viewed it as a topic that really any podcast could do, but I think I still thought that we probably would have enough interesting insights and perhaps critical views on it that it would be worth covering. And my ears perked up when I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, that you told me that you had started reading the Getting Things Done book by David Allen, and you were interested in kind of starting with the system. And for all the people at home, I am a longtime Getting Things Done cultist. I think I read the book when it came out, and I took several swipes at it through the years, and have been firmly entrenched ever since. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, me being Tom Cruise and you saying, "Hey, have you heard of Scientology?" You know, my ears perk right up.
Nice analogy. So when do we get divorced?
So yes, I'm obviously very interested in this topic, and I have a lot of criticism of, well, I don't know about a lot, but I have criticism of Getting Things Done too. So I'm very interested in this, you know, the Buddhist beginner mind of Getting Things Done. And have you finished the book yet, or still read it?
I have not. I've gotten to that chapter, probably the chapter where everybody gets stuck. I think it's in the latest version. It's like chapter 8 or chapter 9, where they go through the specifics of doing the inbox sweep.
Mm.
And then I think chapter 9 is kind of organizing things better. It's whatever. It's you know, it's the real meat of the system. And we should probably start. We shouldn't necessarily spend a lot of time on it, but maybe do a little bit of an introduction to what it is for people who don't have any idea.
Okay. So I have an outline here, so I'll just kind of burn through it. And so there's from time immemorial, people have had like to-do lists of things, anything of, you know, you can see what a cultist I am. I just call it Getting Things Done in general, but of things that items to do. And the Getting Things Done system, it is a system, and that's one of the reasons why it's very attractive to programmer type personalities. Is it's different from a lot of systems in that a lot of systems will want you to focus kind of on your life goals first, and Getting Things Done is very action oriented instead. And the thinking there is that you can't really figure out your goals if your day-to-day activities are out of control. So it really in the tree of your to-do lists, it focuses really on the leaf nodes that is like, what is the next step to get this project done? And it really focuses on it.
I don't think I've ever heard it being described in such a programmery fashion before.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's
there
that's,
you go. No, yeah, it's good.
Okay, good, good. And so it sounds like what you're stuck on is probably the first thing that you do with Getting Things Done, which is the dump, which is a big part of Getting Things Done is that our brains are – I was going to say they're really great at things, but they're not that great really. But they're good. They're okay at some things and worse at others. And one of the things they're really bad at is reminding you to do things. Like, you know, you have that closet that needs cleaning out, and you know, you'll be driving to work, and your brain is like, you know what? You should clean out that closet. You're like, hey, man, I'm driving to work. What do you want me to do? And it just will keep reminding you, keep hounding you at times when you can't do anything about it. So a big thrust of Getting Things Done is to Take every single project that's in your brain that you're thinking about, that's that you're being reminded of at inopportune moments, and writing it down, getting it out of your brain. And a big part of why I think Getting Things Done is fantastic is that it respects how you interact with the world, and that it understands that if a system is not trusted, that if you write something down on a legal pad and you put it in a drawer somewhere, your brain knows you're not ever going to look at it and will keep reminding you. And so that's why it's David Allen does a big thing about how it's very important to have a so-called trusted system. It's a list you check every day. And only once your brain actually like sees you doing it will your brain stop, okay, starts thinking, okay, I don't actually have to keep reminding you at this right before you're going to go to sleep. So that's a biggie. So the important thing is that, I don't know about you, but I've definitely noticed that there are times when I like when I'm doing something, when I'm executing on something, like I just want to keep going and executing. And there seems to be like this like mental shift that takes place when I'm kind of thinking about the next thing to do. And so it's like two different modes of my brain where it's like I'm in the doing mode or the thinking about what I'm going to do mode. And switching in between is actually like a context switch, and it's actually kind of derailing. And Getting Things Done is big in terms of kind of laying out what you need to do, getting all the projects down on paper or in a text editor or outliner or what have you. And once you have it all done, figure out what you're going to do. And then you just have this list of tasks to execute on, and you don't have to think about the next thing to do. It's already there for you when you're actually executing. So right, it sounds... go ahead.
One of the big things, Merlin talks about this a bit, and I don't have the exact numbers of the episodes. They're recent episodes that you can be pretty easy for you to find. But they're, and I'll actually also put them in the show notes. So Merlin Mann, who's done a lot of stuff about getting things done, has talked for about three episodes recently, sort of introducing people to getting things done again. And one of the things that he talks about that they also talk about in the book is this idea that, and now it's lost, you know, it's gone from my mind, is, how does it go? It goes that you're just a lot more that, yeah. Nope. Oh, jeez. Now it's drawing. I think something about being like really getting that really anxious aspect of it so that you can't rest if stuff isn't, no, that's not necessarily it. All right. We may need to do some post editing here. I had it. Oh, well, okay. Keep going.
Okay. Well, yes, you talked about Merlin's episodes. Looking through the page, it looks like the show is, of course, called Back to Work. And it looks like he starts at episode 97, and then maybe he goes through 98 and 99.
Okay, that sounds good.
So those are the episodes. So if you're new to getting things done, probably not the worst place to start. There might be better introductory material to that online. I know he did an interview with David Allen. That's actually really good. And I think he links to from those podcasts, so you'll want to check that out. But that tends to be kind of more like practitioners of getting things done. You want kind of more deeper information about it. So I don't know what the best – I tell you how I started is that I got the book and I got the audio book. And I read the book a few times. I listened to the audio book more times. And you know, David Allen points out that like each time you listen or read to it, you're going to get something different out of it. And I found that to be very true. So it's one of these things where it's like you go through the book and a lot of stuff, I don't know, when you even say it doesn't seem applicable, but it's just like it doesn't click yet. And it's only like as you get deeper into the system and you use it, then you can kind of like, oh yeah, that actually is a really good point that somehow this man just skipped over five times. So that's why it's like feels so much like a cult, right? Because you have this holy text. It's like, oh man, just keep reading it. You get so much out of it. But another important point of getting things done is the his phrase, which, man, this is sounds so much like a cult, is mind like water. And so the entire idea is that, you know, you have all these things you're thinking about doing. You're thinking kind of on your mind. So you get it out on paper. You get it out of your brain. And you have this objective list. And so now once you have this objective list, when something new comes up, you can weigh it against the things that you know. If you're having this like really crappy reminder system that your brain offers you, is that you don't ever really have a handle on what your commitments are and what you really can do, and you feel guilty all the time because you know there are things you should do, but what were they? And because your brain won't remind you about them when it should. And the nice thing about having the list is that when someone says, oh, what about this other project? You can actually go to your list of projects. And you can say, oh, this project is important, this isn't. And you can decide whether or not you actually – this is something you can and want to do. And it makes it very clear it helps really make your priorities explicit. So it really helps a lot with that.
So I've remembered what I was going to say.
Oh, good.
And this is actually also an interesting thing for getting things done because – It's that sort of same sort of thing that if you have to rely on your mind giving you back that information, you know, your mind can't do it. My mind couldn't even do it for the last 5 minutes. But the example, like one of the kinds of examples that you hear about is, okay, if you have on your to-do list, you know, clean garage, you might think, well, okay, that's what I need to do, so I'll just get to it. But then you keep putting it off because clean garage is not actually an action.
Right.
Cleaning the garage actually relies on a whole bunch of subtasks, a bunch of more specific things, and you may need to find things out first.
Mm-hmm.
And so you tend to put it off because you're like, well, this is going to be a big deal, and I can't just do it. So you have to think, you're going to have, it's like a reminder to start thinking about doing it. And most people don't want to do that. So you put it off.
His example there is like, you know, clean out the garage. He said, well, what do I do about the fridge? Like, oh yeah, I want to give it to my friend, but does he even want it? And it turns out like the first action on clean out the garage is call Fred about the fridge.
Right.
But it's like there's two points of friction there. There's the point of actually thinking through what needs to be done, which is so much pain. And it's like surprising amount of pain, but there's totally pain there. And also it's the friction of having to call up Fred and talk to the guy, right? Because I don't know about you. I just hate Fred.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm giving my fridge.
My God, Fred. Yeah, right. And if you have things where, okay, I need to wait for a time of day to do that,
right,
or whatever,
right.
I need to wait for the weekend, then you forget.
Yeah, it's totally, yeah. And this is another great part of getting things done is that I told you how it kind of like it respects the way your brain works. And there's a couple things that, like, the thing that really got me started in getting things done was the little anecdote, which rang true to me, was if you have something you need to take with you to work, and you absolutely, I mean, it's mission critical, you need to take it to work. So what do? You end up, you take your file folder or whatever you need to bring, and you put it in front of your door. Right, so it's in the way of the door. So you can't leave the house without stumbling over this thing. And it's the idea is that there's really two parts of you. There's, well, N parts, but we'll just say two parts for now, is that there's the part of you that is thinking through the next day and what needs to be done. And then there's the not-so-bright part of you that's stumbling through the morning, trying to get out the door, and is not really conscious of everything that needs to be done. It's just basically executing and kind of stumbles over this thing that are like, oh, yeah, I need to bring this. And getting things done recognizes those two types of people. The guy who's kind of thinking ahead, kind of looking out for the future, kind of looking past the horizon, and the guy who actually has to get things done. The other thing is that, unlike most other systems, is that getting things done respects numbness. That the idea is that if you have a stack of paper and it's been sitting on your desk for a few weeks and you just eventually go numb to it, like it's there and you just don't look at it. You know there's stuff in there. It might be important, it might not be. And you don't even want to process it anymore. And it's just, it becomes a fixture on the horizon and it's not really part of your life anymore. And it recognizes that. And it gave credence to this. And with getting things done is that you'll get numb to your to-do list. This happens to me on a regular basis. And it's important for you to recognize when you are going numb to something and you realize that you're getting off track there. But
sure. Mm-hmm.
So I've been talking about a lot of good things about getting things done. It's a really deep subject, and we don't want to go over a lot of it just because I would do a crappy job of going over it. And, of course, the books and the websites are out there and all that. So there's really no reason for me to do. So Well, one of the reasons why I want to talk about this episode is because of the value add we can do when talking about this. I like the fact that you have the beginner's mind on this, and also that you're naturally skeptical of this type of stuff. So that's good. But I also want to talk about kind of like the disagreements I have with getting things done, or at least how I've had to tweak the system or to make it work for me. And one of the big things about getting things done is that it's technology neutral, and that he kind of, like, in his book, this book was written circa 2000, so maybe 2001, something like that. And so David Allen makes mention about, like, using a Palm Pilot and stuff like that. And, you know, it's not, I mean, it feels very dated now. It obviously didn't back then. But, you know, you just could obviously substitute Palm Pilot for iPhone or a tablet or something like that. And pretty much all his advice stands. It's not like him telling you where to tap on things, right? But the part of it is that also he kind of has these things called contexts, where that you have different contexts in your life. And I find that they don't work too well for me. And that is multiple reasons for this. The first reason is that I've structured my life to try to have to minimize contexts. So, you know, I have internet pretty much anywhere. And when he wrote the book, it's like one of the contexts is have internet. So you things you need to do is like write an email or check your email or Google this research topic. With me, it's like it's always on, it's always available. There's no reason to have that context. It's just always there. I mean, even on airplanes, right? You can pay for Wi-Fi. And so I do end up using context a little bit. And I often will have a context per person, so that if I have a bunch of tasks that is related to a person, next time I see them, I can say, oh, I have these five things I want to talk to you about. I also use a context per store, which is like physical store, place you shop at. And that's largely because of OmniFocus. And so OmniFocus is the Omni Group's little task management system. And it's probably it's the big dog. There,
I would say it's not so little.
I would imagine it's probably the most popular one out there, but maybe not. I have my own little bubble, but it seems to be popular in my bubble. And so OmniFocus, and so a lot of OmniFocus has much like getting things done is awesome, but I have some issues with. And one of the issues with OmniFocus is that each action item only gets one context. And it's not the end of the world because you can nest contexts in each other, but it's really not enough. But what nice thing about OmniFocus on the iPhone is that you can tie a context into a search for like a Google Maps search, so that you can say you can have a context called hardware store, and you can have a locational search for a hardware store. So that way, if you have a bunch of things to buy at the hardware store, you kind of file those under the hardware store context, and then we'll actually bring up a map saying where your nearest hardware store is. So when you go there, you can see what to buy. And in many ways, like OmniFocus has trounced every other like shopping list app I've tried because it has that feature. But unfortunately, it's not really meant for sharing a shopping list, so that doesn't work out too well in that respect. But
yeah, anyway. I was going to say that the context, I mean, one of the main, I think, reasons for the context on a day-to-day basis would be as a way to say, you know, shopping lists for different stores.
Right.
So,
And, you know, I don't know. So, like, it seems to me like using getting things done for a shopping list, it's not a great fit. You know, a shopping list is specialized enough. I think there could be a great app out there that does it, but really, every time I use any shopping list app, it makes me Jones for the other ones. And so nothing really has set my world on fire there, unfortunately.
But, yeah, I mean, the thing that I'm seeing with contexts when I try to use what I have already put into projects and actions and such is that, you know, I might have a context which is like, okay, at work, do X and Y, X, Y, and Z. And, but if I, so there's also, I mean, the context versus things like reminders. And reminders is something that I have a lot of trouble with right now. because like a context is, okay, do this at some point when you're in this place. But if it's work, that's 8 hours a day
right.
of you could do it at any point during that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too broad for me.
Right.
That means I'm going to forget because I'm not, if I have to keep in mind the fact that I have these things that I can do, well, then I'm not having this sort of restful mind anymore because I have to keep that in my mind somehow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I do it as a reminder, like, okay, at 2 o'clock, I'm going to do this thing that I can only do at work. Well, but that's not really true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm saying at 2 o'clock because that's how, you know, the calendar works. That's how reminders works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, you know, oh, I could do that anytime between, you know, like 9 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Six or however late I stay there, or maybe for this one thing, it's like between 1 and 3:30. Like, you know, no, let's say I'm going to make this call. I don't want to do it in the morning, so I want to do it in the afternoon, but I don't want to do it too late in the day. You know, so there's all these things about it where I don't see a system. I don't see a technical system, an application, a calendaring system that can give me that where I'll be. I won't have to keep in mind that I've got to do that sometime in the afternoon during these hours. I'm going to have to keep that in my own head because that's too specialized for all this other stuff. And then if I have to keep it in my head, of course, I'm probably going to forget it.
Right, right. And you, whenever you say I have to keep something in my head, then that should be setting off red alerts for you right there. That's essentially treat that as unscalable.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Danger, Andrew Pontius. Yeah. So how I deal with that type of stuff is that I will set an alarm for that. Let's say I have that phone call I need to make, and if it could really be between 9 and 5, we'll actually set an alarm at 10 a.m., and I will use the snooze functionality. If, at 10 a.m. I'm doing something else, I will snooze it for an hour, so that way it will keep reminding me each hour that I keep pushing it off. And I'll get those multiple reminders through the day, and it's a little bit annoying in that it interrupts my flow a little bit. But usually, I'm good enough that I can feel like how the day is progressing. That I'll know like, oh yeah, I'll definitely better get that in the next hour. Or if like I'm deep in a chunk of code, I'm like, remind me in 3 hours. And so in 3 hours, what that's going to remind you? That's a few times a day, and that should be enough to make sure you get that thing done.
Well, now, does the actual calendar application, the built-in calendar on iOS, do that? I don't think it does, right?
Yes. This is assuming, I'm assuming BusyCal at this point.
BusyCal, right.
I've been using BusyCal for so long, I forget how like normal iCal works.
Right, and so I don't have BusyCal, and you're saying BusyCal lets you say snooze for 3 hours,
yes.
As opposed to just, yeah, that might be very helpful, because if it was every, like, if I had to set it for an hour, and then I had to snooze, and then I had to snooze, you know what? I'm just going to be too annoyed to even,
Right.
I will turn those alarms off eventually.
That said, so I know that BusyCal 2 changed things, and I know I disliked it enough that I went back to BusyCal 1. So it's quite possible that the version of BusyCal you buy today does not operate in the way that I'm describing, and you're kind of screwed. I know that when I tried BusyCal 2, I was pretty horrified that it doesn't work the way I want it to work anymore, and I decided I have to write my own. And so,
how's that going?
Well, I haven't gone to it yet. Once BusyCal 1 stops working, then I'll have to write it. But I'm just hoping that maybe BusyCal 3 or 2.5 makes it work again the way I need it to work.
Is that like that XKCD where they talk about, every change you make breaks someone's workflow?
Yes, I need to heat up my CPU with my heating space bar. Yes.
Oh, well. All right. Well, I'll give it a look-see anyway.
Yeah. So, in general, I find context not that handy. In fact, I'm looking at my OmniFocus context list here, and it's really quite pathetic. I have a couple based on people. Mostly it's based on stores, and that's because OmniFocus for the iPhone is so great as a shopping list. So I consider that basically a failure. I don't know if it's a failure of how I'm using context or if a failure of context in general, but in general, I just don't use them.
Well, let me give you another a more specific real-world example. So I live in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and I have on-street parking.
Yeah.
And so I have to move the car.
Yeah.
Twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So here you go. Like, I have to move the car to a certain side of the street before Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to move it to the other side of the street between Wednesday and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that's kind of crazy, right? Because if you give myself a reminder, the reminder for moving it to the side of the street before Wednesday could be anywhere from, you know, Thursday afternoon to Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. So when do you give yourself a reminder? Okay, well, I could give myself a reminder. Well, do it the day before. Okay, well, I could do it the day before, but I don't have to. Right. Like, am I losing some flexibility there or whatever? You know, so I still wind up, and it also, like, you know, putting something in a context like this for getting things done for something that I have to do every week also seems like a bit of overkill. But on the other hand, they say, you know, as we've talked about, they really kind of want you to put this everything from your mind into this system.
Yes.
So that would mean to do that there too.
Right.
So one thing that I've done so far, like, so I'm not using OmniFocus at all yet. Because I'm trying to be, as you said, a little technologically agnostic, because right. OmniFocus is a very big hammer.
Yes. And the analogy I use with OmniFocus is that it's very much like Git, right? Git is kind of trumpeted as a toolkit to build a version control system with, that people are just happen to be using it directly as a version control system. And OmniFocus gives you a bunch of tools, but it's you have to decide how you're going to use them.
Yeah.
And so I typically don't recommend people get started with OmniFocus if they're just getting started with GDD, because it can be very overwhelming, and I find a lot of people lose perspective in terms of what's GDD and what's OmniFocus.
Yeah. Well, so what I wound up doing so far is, like, I have a context called, you know, specific date Tuesday morning before work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my context, because otherwise, if it was just among the things that I could do any morning, again, that would not be specific enough.
Right.
But I am kind of curious whether that's something that other people use context for, because I don't see any other way to do it, but it feels a little weird to do it that way. So
I have something similar in that I have plants that I want to water once a week. And it could be a little bit early for them. I could be a little bit late for them. That doesn't really matter. Ideally, I would do it once a week. And so I end up setting the OmniFocus does allow you to. So this is one of the points of disagreement I have with GTD, is that GTD has this concept of the weekly review, where you go through all your list of projects. And typically, once you dump your brain into lists, you probably will have 100 to 200 projects. And that's one of the reasons why your life sucks, is because you're trying to keep these 100 to 200 things in your head and trying to remind yourself at inappropriate times to do them. So you get all your head. And this tends to be a pretty massive list. And a lot of these are almost completely unactionable. Like you'll have the idea that you want to vacation in Spain. That's not going to happen this year. And so it ends up that the kind of escape valve that David Allen provides is what he calls a someday maybe list. That everything like learn guitar, wrestle some pandas, that those are the things you want to put on. I can't believe I just created wrestle pandas, but I'm sure that's going to be going in the show notes.
Alpacas, not pandas.
Okay. And so you end up putting that in the someday maybe list. What I've discovered is that sets off my alarm bells because I go numb to it. Someday maybe list ends up being this kind of this bin of unactionable things that is – it's like it almost ends up being kind of this pile of doom that you put things in that you just know that whatever you put in there is going to die. And so I take a different structure approach in that I have a bunch of projects. OmniFocus makes this pretty easy in terms of kind of structuring things into projects within projects, or at least within folders. And I break it down to daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and yearly. And so the types of things that are instead of putting something in my someday maybe list, I'll kind of judge it. Like, is this something I actually want to look at next quarter? Or is this something I only want to look at once a year? And so learn guitar will end up going in my yearly list. And it also gives you a very interesting sync point that I like Merlin Mann. I'm pretty against kind of like the New Year's resolutions. I totally buy into his argument that why are you caring about this arbitrary human date when you could be making your changes now? But the nice thing about kind of structuring this thing where you put your someday maybe thing items into a project list, whether you look at on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, I don't know whichever ones you'd be more sober on, or maybe drunk might be more fun that way. But it's like you look at these projects. This has happened to me. I think I started this system about 2 years ago, and it's very fun. Then you look at these projects like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. Yeah. And occasionally, it's actually I'll look at a project like, oh, I did that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I'm not sure David Allen actually says that specifically, but I think, you know, the plan is that the idea is that you go through those someday maybe projects, not every week and certainly not every day, but you are supposed to go through them.
Yes.
And I think he might actually mention in the book, in that chapter 9 that I'm still trying to completely get my head around, that idea of putting a reminder about things, you know, 3 months down the line or whatever.
Yeah, his tickler file idea too is very handy with that.
Right, the tickler file, yeah, the whole sort of 43 folders. That's yeah. I mean, I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I see the same problem is that I've got a huge list of someday maybe projects so far, and I don't want them to just vanish, because the whole point of this is that you get organized enough that you can get the stuff that is immediate, you know, done. At all, which you were never getting done before, and then maybe you can get to these other things.
Right.
So that's the idea.
And so going back to your thing where you have something you need to do once a week, but you don't, you know, what day you do it isn't all that important. I have a daily review project that I put things like that in, and I have an action item that repeats every week once I do it. And that pretty much solves the problem. So you can. It's not in your inbox. In your inbox that because you've decided what you're going to do. It's that in beginning of each day you're going to look at that list and decide whether today is going to be the day you move the car. Mm-hmm. And you can say, nah, I'll wait another day.
Yeah, I do have to. I mean, since I haven't actually gotten through my inbox yet, I haven't gotten into the habit of doing that sort of weekly review or daily review. But yeah, I figure that's like even. Like if any of my contexts, like my, do in the evening context is like 20 things long because I haven't gotten a lot of things done that I want to get done, I've got to actually have a time to go through that list because I can't just glance through that and pick something, although I guess I could, but I still want to have a sense of what's on that list. Even if I let myself forget it, mm-hmm. I have to familiarize myself with it again because there may be a few things that are better off to do at a particular time than others.
Right.
And yeah, so like really, I'm going to need to get into the habit of reviewing these lists.
Absolutely. The system will absolutely not work unless you look at that list every day as the same way. The reason why email becomes like the default task system for people is because you got to check your inbox. That's how you work with the world, right? And unfortunately, that extends to getting things done, is that you need to check your list each day.
So I have one other thing to talk about, and
go ahead.
We are kind of...
Yeah, I had a lot of more event. Stuff to talk about, but obviously this is running long, so I'll cut off here, but go ahead.
So the other thing for me is that when I was looking through, so most of the feedback that I have so far is from cleaning out the inbox. That's what I've been doing. And one thing that I was talking with you about, Wolf, earlier this week, was that I was actually finding it really difficult to get through the inbox because it felt to me like when I had this thing, and so the inbox is where you throw everything there and you don't necessarily come up with the actions right away. It's just to get it out of your head. Mm-hmm. And then I get to these items, which, like let's say I had clean garage on there, and not really, but let's say that was one example. It felt to me like I had to, when I was trying to get it out of the inbox, decide what all those actions were going to be and make all those decisions right then.
Right.
Or I wasn't doing it right. And he also makes it very clear that what you're supposed to do when you get rid of stuff from the inbox is don't skip anything. Mm-hmm. Do each one. And so I thought, well, I need to think about this. And so, getting every major thing out of my inbox was like a day or two of me saying, well, I have to think about it and then I'll get back to it. And what you were talking about was the idea that, well, no, don't do that then, because then, yeah, you'll never get done with it. All you really need to do is come up with the first one or two actions. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Something that will make progress on that thing. And then, maybe the third thing on that list of actions is, write down some more actions, anything that's really specific to it so that you don't get stuck, because that's what I was doing. And that's why, even though this was for me, a New Year's resolution, I'm still, struggling with it now, is because because the one thing you don't want to do with this is get stuck, but that was what was happening to me. So mm-hmm. got to be more careful about that.
Yeah, I mean, let's say one of your projects is, write a new app. You're not going to bullet point all down to version 6.0 of that app. The first thing you do is that you as a task item, you say, Google this GitHub repository that I think does something similar to what I want to do.
Right.
And that's a perfectly legitimate action, and that probably is actually the next item on the project. And you don't have to think it through all the way. What's the next thing to do? And you probably might come up with two or three other things that you're like, oh yeah, I want to put Sparkle in there, and oh yeah, I might want to check out this cool UI framework and blah, blah, blah. And put that in there too. But you don't have to think it through all through it. That's to get it started.
Right. And that is one thing. Another thing that I believe we talked about is there's going to be a lot of context that you're going to want to get out of your head and onto this list. And so, yeah, just throw it all in there. The actions can be surrounded by, a paragraph or two of text saying, well, this is just every other thing that you have in your head. What was I thinking when I put down this thing in the first place? Because otherwise you're going to lose it. Or again, you're going to try to remember it, which is worse. Mm-hmm. Almost.
Right. So, yeah. OmniFocus has a notes feature on each project and each item. Use it.
Okay. And again, so bring this a little bit back into programming before we sign off, mm-hmm. Again, what I'm hoping is, and one reason this was a New Year's resolution is, I am working on my own app, and that work is not going as quickly as I would want because it seems like, life gets in the way and everything. And also, coming up with that next step for the app so that I don't get distracted, don't get down rat holes. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to do this for this stuff in my life. I'm going to do this for this project too. Mm-hmm. And the measure of whether this was working for me will be whether I, release an app this year, basically.
Right.
So, okay. So any other quick thing before we get
going? Yeah, we're already at 45 minutes, so we better just cut it off here.
Okay. And, okay. So let's see here. Please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And you can find us individually on Twitter, me, A. Pontius, APONTIOUS, and also the same thing on that wasteland we call app.net. And Wolf, his last name, Wrench. That's the word rent, RENT, plus Z, plus SCH. We'll see you next time.